Bianca Capello had eloped to Florence with her lover, whom she soon after married. She then became the mistress of the Prince Regent of the Duchy of Florence. Her husband took a mistress of his own, but her family murdered him on Bianca's doorsteps. Does all that sound bad? Well, it's getting worse. Welcome to the Venetian Stories podcast. I'm René Sandal, and I'll be your guide on this journey. Episode 11, Bianca Capello, Part 2. Cosimo had several mistresses after his retirement, and in 1570 he married the young Camilla Martelli, who had already given him a daughter in 1568. He fell gravely ill in 1572, was mostly paralyzed, and in April 1574 he died. Apparently, the authority of Cosimo was what held his offspring in line, and the following years read like a horror story. Francesco, now Grand Duke of Tuscany, locked Camilla Martelli up in a monastery where she would spend most of the rest of her life. She was only let out shortly for the wedding of her daughter in 1586. There had been some episodes where Bianca and Giovanna had met on the streets, as they lived in the same part of Florence. Francesco now had Bianca moved to a much larger palace on the other side of the Arno River, where she practically held a parallel court to the one in the Pitti Palace. Consequently, their continued relationship came much more out in the open. Cosimo had clearly never approved of Bianca, but had exercised little leverage over his son, as he himself had numerous mistresses. Pietro de' Medici, the youngest surviving brother of Francesco, had married his Spanish cousin Leonora di Toledo in 1571. He was violent and had numerous mistresses, and Leonora lived semi-abandoned at court in Florence. Here she was part of Bianca's daily circle of friends, if you can have friends in such an environment. In 1576, when Pietro believed that Leonora had taken a lover, he came back to Florence, brought her out to one of their countryside villas to accompany him on a hunting trip, and strangled her. Francesco, the Grand Duke, didn't punish his brother, but instead imprisoned Leonora's alleged lover and those who had covered up the affair. However, following the scandal of a Medici murdering his own wife in cold blood, he dispatched Pietro back to Spain. Isabella, the sister of Francesco and also a confidant of Bianca's, had been betrothed to Paolo Giordano Orsini, Duke of Bracciano in the Papal State, at the age of 11. The marriage took place in 1558 when she was 16 or 17. Orsini, however, preferred to live in Rome with his mistress, a Roman noblewoman who was the niece of Pope Sixtus V. He left Isabella in Florence under the supervision of his cousin Troilo Orsini. Troilo became Isabella's lover, but here too, her husband discovered it. Immediately after the subdued funeral of Leonora di Toledo, Paolo Giordano Orsini took his wife out to a villa in the countryside and strangled her. The murder of Isabella didn't damage his relationship with Francesco, and he went back to Rome to marry his mistress. They remarried three or four times, as the Pope kept annulling the marriage due to the immorality of the union. Troilo fled Florence, found refuge in Paris under the protection of Queen Caterina de' Medici, who was from another branch of the Medici family. He was assassinated there in 1577 at the behest of Francesco. Now, if anybody thought Francesco was a fluffy little lover boy that Bianca could wriggle around her little finger, well, he wasn't that fluffy. And who knows what Bianca thought of the violent ends of the two women at court closest to her. But whatever she thought, she was wise enough to keep it to herself. One of the more dubious stories about Bianca is around the birth of her son, Don Antonio. Bianca's life depended on Francesco, and if she could procure that male heir, her position would be much stronger. In 1576, she gave birth to a boy. Or maybe she didn't. Even back then, the city was full of rumors about how Bianca had taken the newborn son of a poor woman, pitched him as her own, while sending the real mother away to Bologna. Bianca always treated Antonio as her own son, but few others did. Whatever the truth was, there was always an air of illegitimacy around Don Antonio, which followed him throughout his life. Pellegrina, Bianca's daughter with Piero, had been betrothed to Count Ulisse Bentivoglia from Bologna through the intervention of Francesco. They got married in Bologna in early 1577. Bianca traveled there with her only offspring in February and planned to stay there for several months. Then disaster struck back in Florence. In May 1577, Giovanna gave birth to a boy. On the seventh attempt, Francesco had got his male heir. Feasts and celebrations occupied Florence fall of June, but Bianca remained in Bologna. Her life and position in Florence depended entirely on her relationship to the Grand Duke. If he now shunted her aside, she would be a nobody. If he decided to retake what he had gifted her, he could do that. Over the summer, Vettore Capello, her brother, came to Bologna to see her. It probably means that they had exchanged letters. Who initiated the rapprochement, we don't know, but Bianca was now in direct contact with her Venetian family again after 14 years of separation. In August, Bianca bought a large palace in Venice, the Palazzo Trevisan in the Rio Canonica, just behind the Doge's palace, for her father and brother. It is difficult not to see this as Bianca hedging her bets, in case the developments in Florence didn't go her way. For the baptism of infant Don Filippo in September, Bianca still remained in Bologna. Only in November did she return to Tuscany, but remained in one of her villas outside the city until early 1578. Even then, she kept a low profile and stopped giving the lavish parties and entertainments which had been her wont before. She had evidently done the right thing, because her relationship with Francesco resumed. Bianca now kept her contact with the Capello family going, and in early April 1578, Vettore Capello came to Florence to visit his sister. As he arrived, Giovanna, pregnant again, fell ill. Francesco invited Vettore to the Pratolina villa outside Florence, where he and Bianca entertained their Venetian guest. The villa, built just a few years earlier as a retreat for Francesco and Bianca, was one of the grandest of the Medici villas in Tuscany. Later, Vettore was presented formally at court, which didn't escape Giovanna's attention, and she understood that her rival was still her husband's lover, male heir or no male heir. Then,
as Francesco and Bianca were traveling by carriage from Florence to the Pratolino, they crossed the carriage of Giovanna. Giovanna, pregnant and not well, verbally confronted Bianca and then ordered her carriage back to the Pitti Palace. The following day, Francesco and Bianca properly at the Pratolino. Giovanna went to the Church of the Annunciation to pray for a safe delivery. As she left the church, she fell head first down the stairs. Rushed back to the Pitti Palace, she gave birth to a stillborn boy. Francesco rushed back to Florence as they received the news from the city. He arrived just in time to ask her forgiveness before Giovanna expired. Giovanna died 31 years of age, after 12 years of marriage to a man who clearly didn't love her, having had 10 pregnancies. Only 3 of her children survived her, and one only by a few years. She was one of the most privileged persons of her time. Born in the purple, she lived a life of limitless wealth. Yet her life was short, more pain than joy, more sorrow than happiness. Francesco had to remain in mourning for 1 year after the death of his wife. Bianca had, already after the murder of Piero, extracted a promise from Francesco that he would marry her if Giovanna died before her. Now Giovanna was dead, and Bianca tried to hold him to that promise. The family and the Florentine aristocracy had never really accepted Bianca. They hadn't been able to eliminate her because she was always the Duke's favorite, but they didn't want to have her as their superior. Cardinal Ferdinando de' Medici, in particular, didn't want Francesco's Venetian mistress regularized, and he soon started to search for a suitable new wife for the Grand Duke. Bianca, however, was aware of this, and on June 5th, just 2 months after the death of Giovanna, Francesco and Bianca married secretly in the Pitti Palace. To keep the facade up, Francesco appointed her governess to the 3 surviving children and had an apartment prepared for her between his apartment and the rooms of the children. That way, she could live in the palace without arousing suspicion, at least in theory. Bianca wrote the news to her Venetian relatives in August, and later that year, Vettore Capello returned to Florence. He probably came as a kind of informal ambassador to figure out how the alliance could work to the advantage of the Republic of Venice. The marriage between Francesco and Giovanna had been an alliance between the Habsburgs of Austria and the Medici of Florence. It was more than a marriage between 2 individuals. It was an alliance between 2 dynasties and 2 states. What would a marriage between Francesco and Bianca mean for the relationship between the 2 states? On the face of it, nothing. Bianca was a Capello, but they were but one of more than 100 noble families in Venice. The Capello family didn't rule Venice, since Venice was a republic. Bianca wasn't a relation of the ruler of Venice, because there was no such ruler. Naturally, both the Republic of Venice and Francesco de' Medici would want it to mean something, as both sides would probably benefit from a closer relationship. Luckily, Venice had been in this situation before and had a model to copy. When Caterina Corna married James II, King of Cyprus, in 1468, the same problem had been solved by having the Republic of Venice formally adopt Caterina Corna by public deed as daughter of the Republic. The suggestion Vettore brought to Florence was therefore that the Republic of Venice would formally adopt Bianca as daughter of the Republic before the official marriage. The marriage would then be an alliance between the 2 states, even if Venice wasn't a monarchy. The price Venice wanted in return was that Bianca should become Grand Duchess of Tuscany and not just consort of the Grand Duke. On June 10th, 1579, the marriage of Francesco and Bianca was made public. 2 days later, an ambassador from Florence arrived in Venice carrying two letters, both dated June 10th. The ambassador was hosted by Bartolomeo and Vittore Capello in the palace, which Bianca had bought earlier, and on the 14th he was formally received by the Signoria and the Doge in the palace. The letter from the Grand Duke of Tuscany announced his desire to make Bianca Capello his wife. In the letter from Bianca to the Signoria, she formally requested the consent of the Republic in the form of a declaration that she was daughter of the Republic. On the 15th, the letters were read aloud in the Pregati, the Venetian Senate, which immediately voted to accept the suggestion. The formal declaration by the Senate is dated June 17th, 1579. Quote, as it has pleased the Grand Duke of Tuscany to choose as his wife the Lady Bianca Capello, gentlewoman of a most noble house of this city, ornate of those most clear and singular qualities which has made her worthy of every great fortune, and to make a convenient sign of the highest pleasure with which our Republic has received this event, and in correspondence with the esteem which the Grand Duke has shown us, in this his important and very wise resolution. Let it be decided that the above-mentioned most illustrious and most excellent Lady Bianca, Grand Duchess of Tuscany, be by the authority of the Senate created and declared true and particular daughter of our Republic. End quote. The form and shape of this document is that of a Venetian law. Neither of the two letters to the Republic mentioned the title of Grand Duchess of Tuscany in relation to Bianca. This made it look like Francesco wouldn't give her that title, maybe to placate Cardinal Ferdinando, who opposed the marriage. The Venetian reply, as quoted above, made it obvious, however, that the declaration of true and particular daughter of our Republic was for the Grand Duchess of Tuscany. It is implied that if you didn't get that title, the declaration of the Senate would be null and void. The Republic of Venice wanted its part of the bargain. That same day, in a similar motion, the Senate declared Bartolomeo and Vittore Capello knights. Venice never had a feudal past, and there were no real knightly orders in Venice. But they did have the Order of the Knights of San Marco. It didn't involve any ceremonies with kneeling and sword and things like that. It was little more than an honorific title the Republic could bestow on deserving noblemen. In this case, it served to provide the father and brother of the Grand Duchess of Tuscany with noble titles which people outside Venice could understand, so they would be treated with due respect. The next few months saw a flurry of missives and ambassadors traveling back and forth between Venice and Florence. Vittore Capello personally carried the Republic's replies to the two letters to Florence, and later returned with the replies to the replies. In July, the 13-year-old Don Giovanni, the natural brother of Francesco, traveled to Venice and was treated with all possible and impossible honors. The Council of Ten even permitted that he cast a ballot during a session of the Greater Council, once and only once. The Republic had appointed two ambassadors to represent Venice at the wedding. They arrived in Florence on October 28th. With a train of 500 horses and 70 noblemen, all hosted in the Pitti Palace. A series of audiences, meetings, and feasts followed, where all the different parties honored each other and presented their gifts. The actual wedding ceremony took place on October 12th in the Palazzo Vecchio. As Bianca entered the hall, she was led to Francesco by the two ambassadors, while her father and brother walked behind them. This was the Republic, not the Capello family, giving away a true and particular daughter. The Grand Duke had requested that Bianca wore a ducal crown for the wedding. But Venice naturally had an aversion to crowns. Venice had no crown rulers. A special vote back in the Senate in Venice had granted the ambassador authority to place a crown on her head, but to make it obvious that she was not in any way a ruler of Venice or related to any such ruler. Therefore, when the ambassador placed the crown on her head, he proclaimed loudly that it was, quote, a sign of being a true and particular daughter of the Signoria of Venice, end quote. 3 weeks of feast and celebrations followed the wedding. Bianca was at the pinnacle of her dreams. Giovanna had given Francesco the male heir he needed. But in 1582, Don Filippo fell ill, and in a few weeks, he died, age 4. Any attempts at having Don Antonio, the supposed son of Bianca and Francesco, declared legitimate, were blocked by the rest of the Medici clan, especially Cardinal Ferdinando. Bianca's health started faltering in 1585 with faints and fevers, which were often interpreted as pregnancies, but they weren't. Attempts at getting Francesco's brother Pietro to remarry failed, also because many eligible families were loath to give their daughter to a man who had already murdered his wife once. In the late summer of 1587, the family moved to their residence in Poggio a Caiano, in the Tuscan countryside. Cardinal Ferdinando joined them from Rome, and in early October, also Pellegrina and her husband. The men went hunting on the grounds, but Francesco got a fever. As he got worse, Bianca too went to bed with a fever. Neither would survive. On October 19th, Francesco died. Before he expired, he gave the keys to the castles of Tuscany to Ferdinando, designated him as his heir, and asked him to protect and take care of Bianca, Pellegrina, and Antonio. As the body of Francesco was readied for transport to Florence on October 20th, Bianca died without knowing Francesco had died before her. The most likely cause of death was malaria. Needless to say, theories of poisoning have abounded since their death became public knowledge, usually with Ferdinando as the villain. However, no decisive proof of foul play has ever been found, while remains of bacteria which leads to malaria have been found in the remains of Francesco. Francesco was buried in Florence on October 20th, and Bianca the day after. While Francesco was interred in the Medici Chapel in the Church of San Lorenzo, Bianca wasn't. Ferdinando had never approved of the relationship between her and Francesco. And when he was asked if Bianca should go to the Medici Chapel too, his answer was, "No, she has already been with us for too long." Asked where they should bury her, he answered, "Wherever." Bianca was therefore buried in an unmarked grave, probably within the Church of San Lorenzo, without any ceremonies or public mourning. The location has been lost to time. In Venice, the first news of her death arrived from Rome, along with the information that Ferdinando had resigned as cardinal to take the title of Grand Duke of Tuscany. Then a formal dispatch arrived, in which Ferdinando requested that there should be no public mourning for Bianca and Francesco. the Signoria, realizing that the direction of the wind had changed, didn't declare any public mourning for the true and particular daughter of our republic.
That was today's episode of Venetian Stories. Thank you for traveling with me. The next episode will land whenever I have time to record it, but if all goes well, within a couple of weeks. If you happen to come to Venice, come join one of my tours about the history of Venice. You can find them at historywalksvenice.com.